Come to order. Hope the public hearing on House Bill 5016. Superintendent Munn.
This morning.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Stan Munn, Superintendent of Public Instruction with offices at 255 Capitol Street. May I just inquire briefly, would you like for us to cover at this point our strongest concerns on the budget briefly, or what role did you want us to play at this point?
So what would you,
Madam Chair, I think because it's been some time since the subcommittee has heard about this budget, we last met on this budget at the end of March, it might not be a bad idea to at least briefly cover each one of the packages and then, of course, emphasize those as I turn to you.
Thank you. By way of introduction to the packages, I would just like to indicate that when school improvement and education reform was passed, there was implicit in that an essential and strong role of leadership from the Department of Education that was required to assure that the dollars that are spent for school improvement, in fact, have the best leverage throughout the school system. And I ask you to review our budget and our work effort with the question in mind, will schools be able to spend the nearly $5 billion that they will be provided by the legislature wisely without the adequate leadership of the Department of Education? And I want to suggest to you that as we analyze our budget, every one of the dollars of those nearly $5 billion will be less valuable to schools, less valuable to the state of Oregon if the department does not provide the leadership that's needed. And I think it's legitimate to ask the question, is the leadership at the Department of Education being provided? Is it adequate? Is it carrying out for you the mission that was requested? There was an independent audit done through the Secretary of State's office that indicated that there were serious gaps in the Department of Education's leadership, that there was not adequate and strong enough leadership from the Department of Education in providing for school improvement, that there was not adequate professional expertise provided to schools to assure that they got what they needed in that regard. And as I analyzed our budget before the legislature began, I looked at the most critical pieces that I and the former superintendent of public instruction believed would allow us to correct the deficiencies that existed in that audit. And I want to suggest to you again through the packages how I believe that occurs. There is a package 106 for $700,000 that adds five curriculum specialists. Allows a full-time English specialist, reading specialist, math specialist, science, social science, half-time in arts, second language, technology, and health. Now, I want to tell you in terms of that Secretary of State's audit, what we have today in terms of our expertise. We have people that are doing .2 in one thing, .2 in another thing, .2 in another thing, and their ability to provide the kind of expertise to spend that $5 billion that you provide to schools is simply not existent with that kind of a process. They cannot be trained in one specialty in significant depth and then be expected to provide that kind of technical expertise in four or five areas and do a quality job. So we have asked for the funding of that 5FTE to really provide the quality technical service that schools throughout the state of Oregon need. Lest you think that school districts simply have the wealth to provide that expertise on their own, the Beaverton School District, for example, is not able to provide a full-time reading specialist. The Department of Education needs to provide those kinds of services for both small and large schools. The Department of Education also cannot provide consistent quality services with the 65% turnover that I mentioned to you had occurred over the last 3 years. We train staff, and school districts hire the staff away from us. Packages 104 and package 105 provide for salary increases for our staff that will allow us to hire and retain top quality staff to do the work involved. And I want to describe to you a process that I've gone through recently. I hired, when I became deputy superintendent, an interim deputy in charge of instruction for a six-month period while I could provide a search for a full-time deputy. We pay our deputies in the range of $90,000. I began that search and found that I simply could not attract from the best levels of deputy category at that $90,000 level. We got permission from DAS to either go out and seek from private foundations or some other source the funding to be able to raise that pay to $100,000. At that level, I was able to recruit a group of top-notch deputies that would allow us to then hire from that source the kind of quality we needed. I urge you and plead with you to allow us to have the kind of resources we need to carry out our efforts. And the packages I've mentioned so far, 106, 105, 104, are minimal amounts of dollars in terms of the dollars we're providing to education, but they are essential to do a quality job for the schools throughout the state of Oregon.
Dan, can I just interrupt you here for a minute? I have a question for you. I'm looking at, the committee doesn't have this, this is in the worksheet from staff, the allocation of your curriculum specialists. You have 0.4 for English, 0.4 for math. Reading, you have 0. Science, you have 0.4. Social science, 0.4. Arts, 0.2. Second language, 0.2. And technology, 0.2. Why would you prioritize arts over reading?
We don't. We move reading to a full-time specialist.
But currently, that's how it is. There's no assignment for reading, but there is for arts.
Yeah, I can't tell you why that was done before I came into office, but, for example, when I looked at the budget when I was elected but had not taken office, there was 0 for reading. I requested that it move to 1 full-time. So I can't defend the history on that, but I can tell you that I have a passion for the reading issue and can move it into a priority position.
Could they make that shift from the arts to the reading if you're able to do that?
Well, if you lose the 0.2 arts, you lose your entire arts assistance program. Mm-hmm. And do we want to leave the state without any kind of professional arts assistance at the state level? My answer would be no.
Well, what I'm saying is if we have to prioritize, what would your priority be?
Well, I would suggest this. Then in a budget that is the size of the state of Oregon budget, that I believe that we can find a 1 specialist for reading for 1,200 schools and 0.5 specialist in art for 1,200 schools, I believe that the state should be able to and can do that.
Okay. Well, Senator Gordon.
From a historical perspective, Mr. Superintendent, is it accurate to say that at one time, reading, science, and specialists were in fact part of the Department of Education?
There was a much heavier expertise available in the historical activity of the department.
And so what we're attempting to do here is regain expertise that we once had, and expertise that would be required if the department is going to be able to provide the kind of leadership that you talked about here.
In large part, that's true. Madam Chair, in looking at the additional packages, if you look at...
Madam Chair.
I'm sorry. Representative Ross?
Before we leave 104, 105, 106, could you go... The explanation we have in our book is fairly brief, could you go over those packages separately so that we can understand the difference between the packages?
Yes, let me have Chris Durham just explain the detail of the separate packages.
Because they all deal with salary adjustments, and there is some difference between them.
Good morning, Madam Chair, Representative Ross. Chris Durham, Department of Education. The package 106 that Mr. Bunn mentioned first, those are education program specialists, equivalent of 5 FTE, which, as Stan mentioned, brings portions of coverage in the subject areas up to a full or half time. The funding is just strictly as if there were 5 full time, although in reality we will spread out those duties to represent the proportions that Stan mentioned, like a full reading, math, and science, and then up to a half in the other areas.
And again, follow-up question on that. And so will these portions, like 0.5 for art or 0.2 for something else, will they be different people or will they be the same people? Will we have 5 bodies or will we have 10 bodies with a portion so that we're hiring people with expertise in this area?
Well, for example, in English, math, science, social studies, social science, we will be able to hire an individual in each of those with the expertise.
Because this FTE is an additional 5
that's
on top of some of these that you have. And so in these most important areas, you will have a whole person?
That's correct.
Okay. That's what I was here.
Madam Chair, Representative Ross, then in packages, I'll go one by one, in package 104 is a salary adjustment, selective salary adjustment proposal for the education program specialist. Stan Bunn indicated that in the last 3 years we've had a turnover rate of approximately 60%. This would be an effort to raise salaries of those education program specialists to the level of comparable positions in school districts, and we've targeted that curriculum directors in medium-sized school districts are close to what our specialists need to be. And then we've looked at salary studies, POSA and OSBA, and matched the curriculum directors in medium to large school districts with the salaries of our staff, and resulting in requiring this amount of general fund, plus there are also federal and other funds of positions that are funded with those funds that comprise that total package, and bring our specialists and hopefully reduce turnover and assist in recruitment for the specialists. Mm-hmm. Just the type that Superintendent Bunn was referring to.
Representative, thank you. Yes. Chris, can you share with me what the specialists you have, 53.33 professors that I see here for salary adjustment. Can you tell me what specifically some of their activities are, just so that I can kind of know?
Madam Chair, Representative Winters, yes. Education program specialists, there's quite a variety of activities, but of most concern at the moment is curriculum development and helping schools technical assistance in the educational reform. Some specialists in special education provide direct services to school districts in special education. They do monitoring. There are specialists in our federal programs, Title I, the disadvantaged program. But they're providing curriculum assistance development to schools around the state in attempts to implement the act. And they receive calls daily from their school district people, and they're providing a great deal of direct assistance, and we also do on-site school improvement visits with the education program specialist.
Okay. Representative Brown?
On package 104, you have $348,000 in federal funds. Is the activity of these program specialists defined by the kind of federal money that they're getting, or is it fairly flexible in terms of being able to use them for areas where you need them?
Madam Chair, Representative Ross, they are in nearly every case very clearly defined, and the dollars must be used for very specific purposes. For example, there's a a gender equity staff person who works with community colleges and high schools on gender equity issues that is required to be spent in that direct way, and we could go down the line case after case with federal funds, and they specifically design how the dollars are used.
Right. And so with this 53 people, you do not have a lot of flexibility to move them into areas of communication about education reform or setting standards or providing technical assistance other than in the areas that federal funds are allocated.
That is correct. You'll see that in a later portion of our budget, we've asked that $200,000+ be moved from grant and aid to use by the department. That is, frankly, to take all of those federal efforts and try to develop a cohesive effort around them to get also the state mission included as well as the federal.
And then package 105.
Madam Chair, Representative Ross, package 105 is...
I'm sorry, can I stop you for just a moment? Senator Gorsuch.
I wanted to be clear about the problem of turnover.
It's been in the last 3 years between 60% and 65%.
Are there imminent departures because of the salary range?
Well, we have constant departures occurring, and we believe that that process is simply going to continue. Our analysis indicates that one of the primary factors there is that we simply can't compete with school districts in the amount of pay.
And we're seeing a significant loss over the past 3 years.
That's correct.
Thank you.
Just one small question, Representative Ross. Of the 53.33, how many are flexible? You said a lot of them are not, but how many are flexible that you can kind of move around, that you have some discretion?
We can provide that for you. I can get the exact numbers so that we can provide.
Maybe what the name says. Okay, thank you.
Madam Chair, Representative Ross, package 104 is a companion package for managers. We've had similar turnover with the management staff, some managers moving on to education service districts at substantially higher rates of pay, particularly special education, and then just most recently Associate Superintendent Merced Flores has moved to Portland. We looked at what are comparable jobs in school districts, where is the audience from which we would possibly recruit, and we believe it would be deputy superintendents in meeting to large school districts. And we looked at the salary studies and found the range of deputies, superintendents, and superintendents of small districts are the people that we would try to recruit. And those costs, to bring them to the level where we could retain them and recruit them, is the result of that package of $416,000. The reason that package is larger in general fund is that most of our managers are, by federal regulation, we can't always charge federal funds for all top management staff. So that management staff, the top level, is heavy in general funds, whereas the specialists were able to charge, as we maximize our direct charge to federal programs with education program specialists.
I'm sure.
Sure.
On an individual basis, what's the difference between what those folks are getting out there in the public schools and what you're paying? Can you give us an example of one person?
I can say that in several instances, Senator Trow, that I have worked with, the range has ranged $10,000 to $20,000.
The difference is the difference $10,000 to $20,000 in terms of what they can get and what you're paying.
The people that I was looking at to recruit.
These are managers or specialists?
Managers and managers.
Is it possible to give me a general salary range? What might one of these 38 education program managers make in salary?
Madam Chair, Representative Wilson, education program managers would be in the range of $60,000 to $90,000 now. And comparable ranges for the positions according to the COSA study would be between $75,000 and $100,000.
So if I might follow up, then we may presume then that their counterparts in school districts are making, on average, $10,000 more dollars than these folks are?
Madam Chair, Representative Wilson, at least.
Thank you.
I was going in the same direction, but I did have another question. Can you tell me what's the source of other funds?
Madam Chair, Representative Winters, there are many sources of other funds. One of the largest is the job training partnership funds that come to us from another agency, and therefore it becomes other funds, although we all know it's actually federal to begin with. Miscellaneous receipts from various sources, and then probably the largest is the indirect that we derive from federal grants. When we spend that, it becomes other funds. We have an indirect rate of approximately 14% that we negotiate with the federal government for federal grant activity, which covers our indirect costs. And when we spend that, it is other funds.
So packages, follow-up packages, 104, 105, and 106 would have that combination.
Madam Chair, Representative Winters, I don't believe 106, that is entirely general funds. But packages 104 and 5 have a mix of federal, other, and general.
Representative Wilson.
Yes, Madam Chair. There are a lot of factors that work in the turnover equation, and I know that from running my own businesses. Salary, quite frankly, is not always the biggest issue, I find. I'd like your comments on that relating to these positions. $60,000 to $90,000 in a community like mine that has a constant 10% to 12% unemployment is an astronomical salary. I realize that these folks are education professionals, but I've just got to ask: are there any other factors working here in the high turnover rates other than salary?
Madam Chair, Representative Wilson, there are always a number of factors that come into play in turnover, job satisfaction, salary, fringe benefits, the atmosphere and working conditions at the location, job satisfaction in a whole series of ways. But I want to suggest that from 25 years of hiring employees in private business and current efforts at hiring at the Department of Education, I can tell you that if your salary is consistently out of line by the number of dollars that our salaries are in this case, that you cannot retain a good people. We have watched at the Deaf School as the Salem Kaiser School District, which consistently paid $5,000 to $6,000 more per teacher, simply hired away the best teachers on a continuing basis. And that was a lesser disparity than what we're talking about here. So that while you can try to meet all of the other criteria, and you do as a result keep many good people, if you have these kinds of disparities, you can't over time keep those people from moving to school districts that have similar PERS benefits, similar other types of benefits, and maintain that kind of wage disparity and keep the people.
Thank you.
Representative Winter.
Looking at the wage disparity, and you said you made the comparison with COSA, with COSA's wage schedule taking the high end from Portland to the low end in another part of the city, and then come up with the median, because...
Madam Chair, Representative Winters, COSA and OSBA study categorizes districts by, I think, three categories by size. And what we did is looked at the medium and large school districts. So there's a large variance between the small district, as you can imagine, the small communities, what they are required to pay versus large districts. We targeted and felt it was most appropriate to look at the medium to large school districts. We did not take the high end. If I had, there would have been another $10,000 each for each position if we'd have looked only at the high end.
If you're doing a comparison with the Salem Kaiser School District, for example, where would this fit in the range?
Madam Chair, Representative Winters,
highest end. So I think we would be slightly understating for this proposal.
Follow up, then you would be greatly under Portland, I take it.
Madam Chair, that's correct.
So Portland drives the medium class. I'm trying to get that geographical area that's driving the cost.
Madam Chair, Representative Winters, I think it's not only the area, but also the size of the district and obviously the responsibility of a large district versus a small drive salary. So.
Stan, you've just been there a short time, and we appreciate that, and we appreciate your desire to make improvements in the department. What opportunities will you have to move people around so that you pay some people more and other people less, concentrating responsibility in some very highly paid positions so that you can attract some very qualified people, and you can have some other people who have talents but may not have that breadth of management experience? How much flexibility do you have to make those kinds of changes?
If the answer I give doesn't answer the question correctly, keep at me, if you will. But my understanding is that there has been a somewhat long-standing discussion with DAS about categorization of jobs. And as I believe you know, there's an attempt to be uniform through the state government in many of the job categories. We have argued that those education specialists are different in certain respects in terms of specialty. And it is our belief that these raises will put us at the point where we then can consistently move forward in a competitive way, and that these jobs are all of the specialty where they need that kind of support. And if this is done, it will get us to where we need to be.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Follow up. Mm-hmm. My impression from the outside and being in contact with the Department of Education for a number of years is that you have suffered from the desire to maximize every federal dollar, and that in so doing and taking out general fund, that has not produced the kind of flexible organization that makes it easier to do that, to move money around. Because once you get a position that's focused on a specific thing, has a heavy involvement of federal funds, it's much harder to say to that person, well, we're going to pay you less because we think your duties are not of the caliber, and we need a higher paid. It's hard to move that money upstairs to a higher paid manager.
Madam Chair, Representative Ross, it is true that we rely in significant ways on federal funds, but I think that while that's created, a straitjacket that those funds be used for those particular projects, it has not created a waste in the use of funds. And my review indicates that the department has done a very, very positive job of maximizing and aggressively going after federal funds in a way that really benefited schools in the state of Oregon. So I think that while we would like much more flexibility, and we hope that the federal X-Flex legislation gives us that those funds have not been a detriment in one of the senses you might suggest.
Yeah. And I agree with you that people have done what the federal government wanted done, but you haven't necessarily been able to do, because you didn't have extra funds, what Oregon would like.
I think that's true.
You need to have DAS do something extra to help you. I noticed that when we got to the Y2K problem, that DAS was suddenly able to be flexible about the kinds of people we hired, because they realized they had a real problem on the horizon, and so they changed their requirements. Does DAS need to do something to help you?
Well, and Chris may want to comment on this afterward, but Madam Chair, Representative Ross, I think both the Governor's Office and DAS has provided tremendous help in terms of support of this particular piece and it being in the Governor's budget, and I think it does provide the solution that we needed.
Mm-hmm. I want to make sure that we're not having a question.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, if we go on, the next package would be 103, and it's 107. It's the database initiative. And I would just say in terms of that initiative that I believe there is strong legislative support. I believe it provides a package that both the Department of Education and the legislature sees as a significant need. And ultimately, what that package does is allow us to expand database initiative from 16 districts to the entire state of Oregon. And I would remind you that it allows for the first time school districts to get detailed information from how costs are allocated in terms of what particular items cost for individual classrooms. In many ways, for the first time, in uniform ways, it will allow the legislature, the Department of Education, the governor, to measure how dollars are being allocated, frankly, how wisely they're being spent, and it will help us move to an accountability and a fiscal management that we have not had historically in the state of Oregon, and I think will be very, very positive. I would urge your full funding of that particular package. The next would be number 401, the pre-kindergarten program. And you'll recall that originally the governor's budget anticipated that we would have more federal funding that could be used for pre-kindergarten. And never mind.
Which one is it?
I don't know. Madam Chair, members of the committee, the next package would be the assessment package, which had a series of efforts, web-based scoring for tests, off-grade testing, local assessment centers at an $8 million figure. In working with the co-chairs and the chair of this committee, we had suggested that there could be a reduction in that package of almost $1.9 million. I want to suggest something about assessment as you look at that area and what should be done here. Probably more than any other area in our budget, there is unrest around assessment. There are concerns about reliability, about timing, about usefulness, about the ability to get effective remediation, about the accuracy of the tests, and about how to clear up the confusion that many people feel surrounds assessment. I want to suggest to you that I've done an experiment in sort of proposing three or four different kinds of assessment packages to different people. And what I found was that no single assessment package was acceptable. And in fact, it wasn't acceptable because in one sense, in the current political climate, assessment isn't acceptable. And so I believe in one sense, no matter what we would propose, the frustration would bring back to us the answer, we don't like your package. And I want to suggest to you that we need to try as best we can to sort of move through the confusion and all of the issues and say what best moves us to a resolution of those concerns that people have. And I want to take some examples. Those who say the test is given at a wrong time. Some suggest that the test be given early, and then if you give it early, those that block their schedule, it's given wrong for. So if you shift it and give it late, then the answer is you gave it so late in the year that we can't use it successfully in the next school year. And so the solution to that question, frankly, is that you allow students to go into a center and take the test at any time during the year that best fits their school situation and their individual education plan. And the way you do that is through a local regional assessment center. There has been a charge that is accurate, that teachers are too burdened with assessment. They're buried with it. They're having to administer it. They're having to be involved in ways that take them away from teaching. Again, the solution is a local regional assessment center administered free of the teacher's work so that the student can have that done. There's been a charge by parents and by teachers that our students will come up to the 10th grade, take the test, have one shot at it. If they fail it, they're out of luck. The regional local assessment center allows the student to take the test at any point, take it on a basis that the teacher, the student, the parents can do remediation. And I would remind you that as we move into local centers, if we do this, we will require the teachers, the administration, to agree with us on what kind of remediation will occur. Now, if you compare our current testing process that will, in fact, go on if you don't approve this package, it has every one of the defects that the public is becoming outraged about. Wrong timing, overload of teachers, the inability to get remediation. And if you reject the proposal that we've provided because there is anger, upset, concern, confusion about assessment, and leave the old system instead of replacing it with a better system, I think we will have failed at doing what those students need to have a quality program. And I would just urge you to run those tests on our current system and the new system. Reliability, teacher overload, ability for remediation, ability for flexibility in terms of when you take the test and how usable it is, how accessible it is, and measure and compare. And I think the proposal that we make is necessary and important.
If I could just interrupt you for a minute, Sam. In your earlier presentation, you talked about full implementation of 2001-2003. Will that still be the plan?
Yes, that would be the plan. We think it is not wise to go into this plan on a statewide basis, attempting to do it all at one time. Working out the bugs all at one time statewide does not make sense to us. So we frankly would use a piloting process in doing that.
Senator Gordon?
Thank you, Madam Chair. When you were here previously testifying about the assessment center, I recall you saying something to the effect that our failure to invest in the assessment center would be devastating to our reform efforts. And I recall that being a very strong statement. And so I would ask you today if your thinking is still the same, that our failure to invest adequately in this area would be devastating to our reform efforts.
Madam Chair, Senator Gordley, I have not changed my view on that. As I view how well the assessment process will work under our current system versus this system, I think it is incredibly important that we move toward this system.
If I may follow up, Madam Chair, as you have walked us through these various cuts, what thinking was shared with you by the co-chair for how they came up with these particular cuts? And how were you consulted in that process of the co-chairs arriving at these decisions?
Well, Madam Chair, Senator Gordley, first, I want to indicate very clearly that I believe that the co-chairs were very gracious, as was the chair of this committee, in consulting me, working with me, laying out what they felt needed to be cuts, being very clear about that. I was on the opposite side, very clear about how passionately I felt about these items, and we indicated in what I would describe as a very positive dialogue the differences of opinion. They expressed that there were significant budget constraints, that a great deal of funding was being used for K through 12 funding. I expressed as a counter to that I believed over time that we could work on solutions that would allow us to fund these items if we stayed with it. It is my hope that after a hearing process on this budget that we might be able to delay a bit on actual decisions and determine whether or not there are some alternatives that haven't yet come to the surface. But I can't in any way complain about the positive way in which the co-chairs and the chair dialogue with this process.
Thank you. Senator Nelson?
Yes, thank you. Since from the last session, this assessment project is a pilot project. Was it $8 million? Now you're comparing it down to $6 million. It seemed to me there was like the total project, you'd have to be $50 or $60 million each biennium to get this project going.
Madam Chair, Senator Nelson, anytime you have piloting of an effort, you have a completely unique expenses to that pilot effort. You have to do building from the ground up that can then be transported to the other areas. If you, for example, train and co-partner with an ESD on how to package these materials. When you then, in the next biennium, move that same package to a separate ESD in another area, you don't have to build it from the ground up. You transport it, and it's substantially cheaper to do it.
I guess what I've heard from the local people is that they're not really enthralled with this local assessment center. It probably can't work. Whether that's true or not, I don't know. It just seems to me when you look at the numbers, you've got about 550,000 students in Oregon that would be subject to the testing at various times, not all at once. That a top-down approach that the Department of Education can actually accomplish everything they like to accomplish, it's almost a black hole. We'd have to put so much money in the Department of Education at the top level that we're not going to get any results at the lower level. You have a comment about that?
I do. Madam Chair, Senator Nelson, we have a number of superintendents who, if you have the time, would like to come in and testify about the essential nature of the local assessment program from Bin Canada in Portland to rural districts. They are supportive. COSA is very strongly supportive and has offered to provide that kind of testimony in that need. I want to stress that if you look at this budget and the dollars we're asking for and what it accomplishes, it is not in any sense a black hole. It is a very structured, very clear, very careful and thoughtful review of how you get the job done. And I think that we always have to be accountable for those things we do. And I think the local will strongly defend what we're doing here if given the opportunity to do so.
Well, I've looked at some of these figures someplace. The 95 session, it was a $16 million budget, went to $28 million, and now we're at $48 million. That's the progression or the direction I'm seeing. We're just pouring more and more money in here, and I don't know if we're getting any results.
Well, Madam Chair, Senator Nelson, I think that the legislature can answer those questions. For example, the database initiative, which came from, arose out of, and grew through legislative process, and is a legislative initiative, takes, in my recollection, about 11 or 12% of the growth of our budget. And when you look at the growth...
$3 million, wasn't it?
It's about $6 million.
No, but the original one was $3
million. That's right. And the point is, when you look at the growth of the budget, you can say 11, 12%, that's a tremendous growth on top of everything else. But it was an initiative that the legislature felt was important to get accountability in $5 billion. And if you ask the question, is $6 million wisely spent, to for the first time in the historical actions on these budgets to get full accountability, I think it's dollars well spent.
Just a quick question, Sam. Of the 80 to 100 centers that you have anticipated, what are the roll-up? How many do you plan to implement 80 to 100, and what are the roll-up costs?
And I want to be sure I answer your question correctly, Madam Chair. The intent is 20 centers during this biennium, and then to move from there. And we will know, frankly, in that effort in piloting what sizes work best, how large we would need to have those be, and the roll-up costs would depend on those things. But frankly, we will attempt the design so that we can have the minimum number necessary to get the access we need.
If you had to give me a figure.
What I would like to do, if I could, is in addition to giving you that earlier answer on the 53 and where the flexibility is there, visit with people in the department about the various scenarios and come back in the next day or so with some answers on that.
For one assessment center, what do you estimate
the
cost for one?
Madam Chair, the proposal is a $6 million figure for the local assessment centers, and that proposal includes 10 first-year centers and then expanding to 20. So that would average the biennium of 15 centers operation full-time. Dividing that into the $6 million would give you the approximate cost per center as a pilot. And I think Superintendent Bunn indicated that cost likely would go down per center from the lessons we may have learned during the development and the piloting.
One other question, Senator. Okay.
How difficult is it to move from one test a year to two? Like you can give one early in the year and then give a second test at the end of the year for this assessment?
Well, Madam...
One time a year.
Yeah. Madam Chair, one of the things that teachers have pled for is not to start bifurcating this process and give a test here and then a test here, because currently they have to be heavily involved in the administration of that. So that adds to their overload. So they have suggested to us that they don't want multiple testing unless it's in a easily accessible situation where they don't have a heavy involvement in it.
But if they do, currently, how does it work? Does the Department of Ed come in and administer the test in the school, or does the teacher give the test? Or
teacher gives the test.
So if they gave the test early in the year and those students that were not successful were retested at the end of the year?
Well, let me give you an example of their attitude about that. I may have mentioned this in the earlier committee, but I spent a good period of time on the telephone with principals of schools asking them to re-sign up this year for the TIMSS testing, which is international testing that allows us to compare our students internationally in a way that's very important for us. They were dropping out of that one single test because of test overload. And we frankly allocated funds to them to help do that. And what I'm trying to suggest to you is that just that one additional test that we had asked them to do had schools dropping out saying we can't do it. It creates an overload for our teachers, and we don't want another test, we can't do another test.
If, though, the Department of Education told them they must do this test, they would have to do the test. Is that correct?
Well, Madam Chair, that's true, but part of the revolt we've had from what I consider the unnecessary pain of the education reform and school improvement was the Department of Education mandating additional regulations in time frames that didn't work for people. And I do believe that based on, for example, the 16 new assessments and portfolio activity that elementary school teachers have to do under school improvement and the additional testing that they've had, that an additional test time frame on top of that is more than sort of the straw that broke the camel's back.
If they've already done the test so early in the year, it seems to me if they're retaking the same test, that should be accomplished without so much effort. They've already done the preliminary work.
Well, if that were to be considered as a serious proposal, I'd very much like to have teachers come in and describe to you what impact it would have on them, because I think it would be significant.
Representative, just a moment. Chair of order.
Madam Chair. The superintendent suggested that if we have one a number of superintendents
from ESC provide that service.
The superintendent suggested that if we have time, we might hear from a number of superintendents just to help us understand how the statewide assessment centers will impact the work out in the district. But I'd like to request that we take our time and hear from the superintendent that he has named so that we clearly understand the implications of any cuts to what's been proposed. Mm-hmm.
I would like additional information as well. I have some questions. With 20 centers, I presume that one could place the centers in such a way that you could pick up a large number of students for the 20 centers, depending upon where you put them. But I'm concerned about the vast space that there is in Oregon and the scattering of our students, and how in the world would you be able with only 20 centers, or indeed if you had 60 centers, how you would get all of those students to have access to such centers.
Well, Madam Chair, Senator Trow, you need to have a center in the Portland area. You need to have one or more centers in Eastern Oregon, Southern Oregon, and you can, and we would and will design the center distribution so that you have all of the geographical types maintained. And if resources were not scarce, funds were not limited, it would make great sense to do this statewide and move all at one time. But in doing that in current budget restraints, you would have to be sort of building the mousetrap from the ground up in every single area, where in doing it in a pilot effort, you then spread it to the rest of the state without doing that building from the ground up throughout.
Representative Winter?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Could you share with us what types of professional services that you're utilizing for the 7.1 million under the assessment? Under your professional services, over $7 million for professional services.
Madam Chair, Representative Winters, that would be contracts with likely the ESDs in the area to staff the local assessment centers. Those would be contract funds for educators.
That's primarily going to the ESD?
Madam Chair, that's correct. It would be contract service.
Representative
If this committee and the co-chairs and the Ways and Means group as a whole say, Stan, I know you love assessment centers, but we're not buying them. Mm-hmm. And you had to go back and do some kind of flexible arrangement at a lower cost, would you use ESDs to provide these tests so they could happen at the beginning and the end of the year? FACT tests are given. We have all kinds of other tests that are given without centers. So what alternative ideas have you considered that would be less costly and provide the flexibility of students getting tested more than once a year?
Well, Madam Chair, Representative Ross, in whatever decision the legislature ultimately makes, it will be our intent to make that process work in the best, most efficient way possible, and to, as we are now, very carefully review how, regardless of the type of system for assessment, we make it very best. And I can give you one example. Whether we have the assessment centers we propose as so essential or an assessment center that is the current type of system, we, for example, do not currently have a process that has the local content advisory panels, teachers in Oregon, at the very end of the process dialoguing with our out-of-state contractors on what the tests look like. So we can, for example, improve simply by taking that one step to close that loop and have them dialogue. There are a number of things like that, regardless of the system we use, that we will implement and constantly review. We will attempt, regardless of the system, to answer those questions. How do we make it more usable, less teacher workload, more accessible, more remedial opportunity for students? But as we all know, there are certain limitations on the particular kind of framework you have where you can't go beyond what you would like to do.
What would, if we did go with the centers and did allocate these funds that you asked for this time, what would be the roll-up cost for the next biennium?
That's a, Madam Chair and Representative Ross, that's a question that the Chair had asked, and we will attempt in the next day or so to answer that question as best we can, or at least give a response.
Thank you.
Sure. As we think of possible alternatives, if we didn't go with the assessment centers per se, using the ESDs, having a concept of maybe having a cadre of testers and remediators available to move from school to school area rather than having the centers where students are transported in. Move the remediators and the testers rather than moving the students would seem to me to be more efficient. And maybe it wouldn't work, and maybe there's not the facility, or maybe that sort of an alternative won't work. But have you looked at that as a possibility? It seems to me that what we're doing here is creating something that's going to be very permanent and very expensive, and maybe there are alternatives that will do what we want to do and do it differently and less expensively.
Madam Chair, Senator Trump, we have looked at that, and in fact that is included in this proposal because we're looking not only at a center being placed at a particular point, but moving people around for the maximum flexibility. And when this proposal was designed, we were looking at the lowest cost way to, in fact, do this process. And I think we found what is the lowest cost way. We continue to look at whether or not there can be cuts made in, for example, what we're proposing today.
If I may, I just think before we give you a big chunk to go out and do this, there's room for streamlining and improvement with what you have already before we start investing in a center to show some very expensive infrastructure. And I would feel better, I think, if things were a little more streamlined already. Give yourself some time to kind of come in and see if we can streamline this a little better before we start taking a bunch of money. Because I kind of get the feeling that there's still a lot of uncertainty. It's not clear, if trying some of these other ways to implement this rather than building buildings and bringing kids in and that kind of thing. See if we can work with what we have already.
Well, Madam Chair, several responses. We're not talking about building buildings, number one. Number two, I want to provide you, and we'll do so, with a copy of our organizational chart for assessment. And you'll see how absolutely thin it is. And there isn't a question of reorganization, using resources a little better. There aren't resources there. It is thin. There isn't sufficient management in that area. There isn't sufficient workforce in that area to administer for 1,200 schools in the state of Oregon. It cannot be done efficiently. And I want to provide that to you and then have an opportunity for dialogue into that issue.
For a pilot. If you manage well, doing things like trying to test twice a year, see how we can do that.
I have dialogued with superintendents and with school people all over the state of Oregon on when do you want the test. Some say January, some say the end of the year. No one says twice in the current system. No one wants a test twice.
But then we hear what they want us to test more often.
They want us to test more often. If you get the teachers out of the workload, you make it accessible, you make it easy for the students to get there, and that's exactly what we've designed.
What if the teachers did the initial test and then the DSDs did the follow-up test? How's that?
Well, that certainly helps, but then you have a sort of a half of a local assessment program. If you have the DSDs, do you do it? We have used volunteers until school districts won't give us volunteers to do this assessment grading process anymore. We really have stretched the flexibility of school districts, the volunteer ethic of school districts, and we're at a point where we can't go beyond where we are with the resources that we have available.
Representative Backlund?
Thank you, Chairman. Stan, I guess I kind of want to get back to the Representative Minnis' question about the frequency of tests. Representative Minnis asked about having two tests instead of one, and you mentioned that you dialogue with the superintendents and you've discontinued the international test. Is that because of the time it takes to grade those, like an international test? I guess what I'm getting to is that when I taught, we would be compelled to give tests. And I grumbled because it was taking time away from my great lecture on the Civil War, or World War One, or the Depression. And so I was driven by a certain emphasis on curriculum and that sort of thing. So when I had to give a test, that I didn't have to grade it. It just took an hour out of my time, or an hour and 25 minutes, or whatever out of my time. Are we talking about that or some other things as well?
We're talking about a combination of things, and I want to make clear that they didn't abandon the test after the conversation. 100% agreed to continue the test, but part of the problem was, as they described it to me, the testing was on top of other testing that was going on at the same time. It came close to the end of the school year when there were a number of other activities. So we adjusted the schedule some to help with that. There were a number of factors. About half of them were workable, and the other half just created workload additions.
Representative Warner?
Thank you, Madam Chair. It's been very helpful to me to hear
Superintendent Bunn the last time he was here talked about this and this time. And I think I initially, before Superintendent Bunn was here last time, had some of the concerns that others did here, only because I didn't understand the way the proposal was being explained. But as I understand it now, I mean, it kind of a light went on in my head the last time Stan was here, and it's for this reason. All of us have visited our school districts and talked to teachers and students, and I know you have because you and I crossed paths out there a lot where we live, and so I know we're hearing the same thing. The good kids, the high-achieving kids, probably won't benefit from an assessment center because they're going to figure out a way to succeed. And the kids that I think that the teachers are most concerned about, that the parents are most concerned about, who get to the 10th grade and take the test and fail, and that we hear now teachers throwing up their hands and saying, you know, I just don't have time to find out who these kids were and deal with them. This is what the superintendent is talking about. Mm-hmm. He's addressing an issue that each of us have heard as a criticism of school reform, which is, let's identify who these kids are early on so we know what their problems are. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a lot of times parents don't know their kids are struggling in school. As the father of three high school graduates, I can tell you that it's sometimes a surprise to me until I go and visit with the teacher or something else that a child is having problems in a certain area. So at a time when we're, you know, when there's this national angst over what's going on with kids, you know, how do we identify what's going on? We have a proposal here by our superintendent to create a center to bring them in to help try to identify the areas that they're having problems in, so when they leave, they can go out and work in those areas. So the parents know that, teachers know that, and at a time when we have 30 and 33 kids in a classroom, well, Grant High School, I visited not too long ago, had over 40 in one class. It just seems to me to make just so much sense to invest this money and be able to then get more benefit out of this new school reform by letting these kids have a chance to work in the areas that they're substandard in so they can achieve. I mean, it seems to me $6 million in if we're discussing 4.95 billion or 4.75 billion or whatever it is not a lot in that context if we're using it to identify those kids in that system. We want to succeed if we can find out who they are. And that's how I see this program, is being able to find out who they are. And then hopefully some mechanism set up to track those areas that they're substandard in and help them get over that hump so they can succeed. And there's all kinds of self-esteem issues involved with that. I mean, I see some spin-off benefits that if kids who think that they're not, can't do well, therefore they don't do well, can be identified and helped early on through a variety of means, there's more benefit than just having them pass the sim. Mm-hmm. There's more than that. There's a lot of payoff to us. So I appreciate the proposal, and I appreciate Stan explaining it the way he has, because it finally sank in with me.
Representative Winters?
Thank you, Madam President. Some of the districts are doing dual testing. For example, they're still doing an Iowa test. At what point do you foresee in the future that we will not be doing double testing because of double cost?
Madam Chair, Representative Winters, I think we need to have serious discussions over the next 2 years with districts about how we minimize the amount of testing that goes on. I think that we never intended the duplications that occur there and at times in curriculum and other areas, and we have to at times embrace what the local districts are doing and they what we're doing, but I will work very hard with the districts to eliminate dual testing.
Do you think that frequency of testing is probably some of the concern that's coming up from the teachers? You know, I know in our district, in Salem-Kaiser district, you have the Iowa testing, you have the STEM testing, and some of the complaints is that we're just testing constantly.
I do think that duplication at times is the concern.
I guess on this issue of assessment, I think the best assessment is at the local level. I give a lot of credit to our teachers. I think if you went to any of our classrooms in the state of Oregon, your teacher can give you the best assessment of where those kids are going. And what we do at the state level probably doesn't mean a bigger jam.
Madam Chair, Senator Nelson, I believe very strongly that that teacher is in the best position to do assessment. But let me stress a very important factor. We have known for years that before our school improvement effort, an A in Baker was not the same as an A in Portland or Corvallis or Medford, that we needed, if we were going to have the highest standards in the nation and the world for our schools, and promise and deliver to our parents and students that when you left schools in Oregon, you would have top-notch math and science skills that were uniform throughout the state, that you had to have an assessment that was uniform through the state, and that's part of why this is a part of school improvement.
We would just disagree on that.
Okay.
Boy, I hope we quit sometime. Madam Chair, I want to check here with Chris and be sure I haven't missed anything. Okay, we've gone through and we'll get out of town. Thank you very much, Madam Chair.
Dave, do you want to come and do an overview of the governor's budget and what his proposal is, Mr. Bajor? You don't look prepared.
Madam Chair, Dave Bajor from Dash Budget Management. No, I didn't come prepared to do a top-down review, overview of the governor's recommended budget. I would be prepared to do that tomorrow.
Why don't we have you do that? And with that, we are adjourned. Close the hearing. We're adjourned.